This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 222, where AC and Andrew sat down to interview Adam Harmatz and Omar Shahin from the Office 365 team at Ignite, recorded live October the 20th, 2017. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focused on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out for free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/trynwc. Hey, CJ.
AC and Andrew sat down with him, huh?
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Well, it was a... Yeah. AC and CJ. Sorry. Yeah, I'm reading my own notes here. I actually wrote down, my notes.
I'm standing here beside myself.
Yeah. I like to talk to myself. I even speak about myself in the third person by initials and name.
CJ is pleased to be here with you, AC.
That's good to hear that. That's good to hear that. AC is very pleased.
Yeah, nice.
So, hey, man, how's it going?
Oh, man. Very good, actually. Well, yeah, mostly good. I managed to pick up a head cold, so I'm recovering. I've been kind of pretty stuffy and blocked up. So that's always miserable, but on the whole, pretty good. Yeah. How about yourself?
Doing all right. I've just been busy as anything, man, both with work and a bunch of personal stuff going on. But we got a fun interview today where you and I sat down with Omar Shahin. Shahin, is that right? I keep messing that up.
Shahin.
And Adam Harmatz from the Office 365 team to talk about some updates that they had from the Microsoft Ignite conference. We sat down at Ignite to talk to them about it. So this episode was, even though we said it was recorded live on October the 20th, it actually was recorded in late September. But we've been trying to catch up on some of the stuff we had from Ignite. So before we get to that, though, we've got a few things we do want to share with people. A little bit of news.
Yes.
But we'll get to the interview very quickly as we can. So the first bit of news here is something that I think we started this podcast about 4 years ago, a little over 4 years ago now. It's crazy to think that. We're now at episode 222. We started this out just to be a lot of fun. You know, I thought it was going to be fun for the two of us to do. I never thought that we'd actually stick around to do this for 4 years. I thought it'd be cool if we did it, but I'm actually surprised that we've done this for this long, and I don't see us stop anytime soon. It's a lot of fun.
No, definitely. No, but it has certainly gone on quite a while.
It has been. It has. And I never had any grand ambitions on this whole thing, but there was one thing, there's one aspect of this that has surprised me. And one of them happened last week. And you weren't able to experience this with me, but I know you did. I shared the story with you. So people remember back at episode 200, we did a special episode where we invited people to jump in and to provide a little recording to where they either did something funny or something heartfelt or how the podcast was different. We gave away a Microsoft Surface laptop to Scott Hoag, who did the ode to the podcast, which was very creative, very cute, really cool thing.
Amazing.
And then we had two recordings that came in, one by Mark Roden, who talked about a very heartfelt thing about how the podcast was important to him. And we gave him an Xbox or awarded him Xbox as one of our best ones. And then another guy by the name of Mohammed from Europe posted one. I believe he's from Amsterdam or from the Netherlands somewhere. And we gave him an Xbox as well, but he wasn't interested in actually taking the Xbox. And he said, well, why don't you donate it instead? And so I was like, well, you know, it's really cool. I really, you know, appreciate you doing that. Where do you want us to donate? He said, well, just how about a children's hospital? And so I was like, well, I know which one I would choose, but it's not about me. It's about, you know, what does he want to choose? I said, well, I'll tell you what. Make life easy for me and CJ. Here's where CJ lives. Here's where I live. See if you can find a children's hospital in one of those areas, because there's been children's hospitals that have touched both of our families.
Certainly.
And you pick, and I'm not going to influence anything. He picked the one that was here in Jacksonville. So I bought the Xbox and I delivered it to him and donated it to him for them to use. And last week we went and delivered it to the hospital. And it's a place called Wolfson's Children's Hospital. Both of my kids have stayed there as inpatients for two different things that happened when they were much younger. But it's a special place for me, for my family. One of the things that I thought, though, was really interesting about it is there's a little boy in our neighborhood, second grader, goes to the same school where my kids go to school. and had this crazy, just strange story where he was playing Pop Warner or Pee Wee football, took a hard hit to the head and was a little dazed or whatever. But over the next few days, he was still getting sick. He was still disoriented. Things weren't right. And so they took him back to the doctor. And long story a little bit shorter, they come to find out that he had a tumor in his brain. It's not that the football didn't cause this, but something triggered, maybe football helped them find it, I don't know. But regardless, they had surgery. Surgery went well. It was successful. But he still has a long road of like chemo and radiation stuff that he has to deal with. But things look good. As we dropped the Xbox off, she said, the lady asked us, do you want to give this to a specific patient or one patient? Do you want us to find a patient or do you want to just give it to the whole floor and let everybody use it? And Meredith and I were like, my wife and I, was speaking on behalf of you guys, and I was like, well, you know, I thought it'd be better if we gave it to the whole floor so that everybody could take advantage of it. And it stayed at the hospital and all that stuff. And they're like, okay, well, we had a specific boy in mind. Well, long story, a little bit shorter. They were thinking about Logan, this little boy that I was just talking about. His name is Logan. And we just kind of all of a sudden made the connection that, oh my gosh, Logan's here. We've totally forgot about it. And they were thinking about it too. So it was just to see, I walked out of there and I don't know what it was, but there was something just, it was really cool to see that this little project that you and I started about 4 years ago, and by the generosity of, you know, we gave away an Xbox, but the generosity of what Muhammad did and the fact it's touching these kids, man, I was sitting there texting you that night. It was like, man, this is, I started putting the Facebook post together. If you guys want to see pictures of it, go to our Facebook wall for the Microsoft Cloud Show. You'll see some pictures that I posted up there with the volunteers and the Xbox. Man, I got emotional. I'm surprised at how it actually affected me.
I think any parent who's spent any time in a hospital knows how tough those situations are and how emotional they can be. And I think, you know, you spent time in hospital with your kids and I've spent time in hospital with my kids. And it just hits me straight in the feels every time I think about kids in hospital and how tough it is on families and on them. And so, yeah, when Muhammad picked Children's Hospital, things like that, it obviously couldn't have gone to a better place. And what an absolute star to choose to do something like that with his prize, you know?
Yeah.
Completely unprompted. You know, he came back to us and said, no, I'd like to donate it. And what an amazing gesture.
I mean, he wasn't a gamer, but I was like, all right, we'll send you a gift card to the Microsoft store. I mean, you want to spend it? And he was like, he wanted nothing of it. He's just like, no, just donate it.
Isn't that incredible?
It was really cool. So I want to make sure everybody was aware, you know, that happened. I'm really glad that we were able to play a part of that. And I'm motivated to do more of it now. So
for sure. We'll definitely have to do something like that.
Yeah. Okay. So let's jump onto some of the news and then we can get onto our interview and do some picks in just a minute.
Let's go for some slightly less emotional news.
Slightly less emotional news. How about positive emotion? Well, that was a positive emotion, but how about some Azure? Let me throw some stuff in your pocket news.
Okay, that sounds good. Let's go there.
There we go. So, hey, Azure. Now, in the past, we've been able to do this because, you know, if you had an MSDN subscription, it's all great. But get this. Azure now has an offering that for 12 months, you get free access to some of their popular services. So what you do is you're going to get started. We have a link to this in the show notes. You can get a free account today. You get started with a $200 credit. You do have to put your credit card in, but it's a whole thing to make sure there's not fraud going on and you're not starting up like a Bitcoin mining farm and all that.
Money laundering scheme.
Yeah. But you get a $200 credit to use with any Azure product for 30 days. You can keep going with those products afterwards. You can even go on and add on, put your credit card on for additional stuff. And they're always free. Now, what it does is they have certain kind of quotas that you have for each one of these things. So let me just, I'll throw a couple of them out there people will be familiar with. 5 gigs of locally redundant file storage, 5 gigs of blob storage on a hot block, 250 gig SQL database, 64 gig managed disks, which are the P6 SSDs, 750 hours of a virtual machine, a Windows virtual machine, 750 hours of a Linux virtual machine, 5 gigs of a Cosmos DB. Oh my God, there's so much more.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it? It's like, this is an amazing free offer, really, because, so they give you the $200 up front, but then these services that are free for a year, right? There's certain of these services that are free for a year, and then there's a whole set of services that are free forever,
yeah.
Right? So there's sort of two groups of services. And so the idea is, reading between the lines, this is to try and entice some of the non-Microsoft kind of world people to go try out Azure. And it gives you everything you need to get started with, you know, some applications, right? Whether it be a web app or something, or they give you some virtual machines to get started. They give you some blob storage, some database stuff, some Cosmos DB for NoSQL stuff. You know, if you want to do like Mongo from a Node app, no worries there, all that sort of stuff. Enough to get you started, and then free for a year for a lot of those things, and then free forever for some of those things as well. So that's obviously plenty to get you started and at least kick the tires. Because, you know, that was one of the tough things for people wanting to try out Azure is you could get a free credit, but it often wasn't really enough per month to really feel confident that you weren't going to get stung with a large bill. But this should make people feel a bunch more confident that they're going to be okay for a while, for at least a year, and if not forever. So there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to run your own website and with a database and some blob storage for images and all that sort of stuff with no worries in terms of getting a bill at the end of every month. And great way to get developers kicking the tires with Azure.
Absolutely, yeah. And it is, if I'm not mistaken, AWS has had a program that's similar to this, so it's not too unique, but still, it's a great opportunity for people to take advantage of. And it's, you don't have to, you know, buy an MSDM subscription to get that same bit. And before, I think what they did have an option where you got 1 month for 100, you got $150 in 1 month, you could use it however you wanted, but this goes much further than that. That $200 too, that's $200 a month for a year. So that's a pretty significant thing that they're doing to help you get going on it.
Oh, is it? I thought it was $200 for 30 days. And then there's a bunch of services that you get for a year for free. So the $200, the way I understood it was $200 for a month.
You're right.
That's just the credit, you know, in case you want to try some paid services. Then you get a Linux virtual machine, a Windows virtual machine, two managed disks, blob storage, Cosmos SQL file storage, and bandwidth, 15 gigs of bandwidth per month, free for a year. And then the stuff that's free forever, app service compute, 10 web apps, 1 million Azure Function calls, free Azure Container Service containers, free Active Directory B2C, Active Directory, 500,000 objects, blah, blah, Service Fabric containers for free forever. So like you get $200 up front, bunch of stuff free for a year, and then a bunch of stuff free forever, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it is cool. I'm sorry, you're right. It was $200 the first month, not every month. Yeah, so that's a cool offering. Now another bit of Azure news, which is what they giveth, they taketh away. I guess this isn't Microsoft taking it away, but in the past, we've had a service in the Azure marketplace called New Relic, which is a popular service outside of Azure. And what it is, it's a performance monitoring tool, monitor the application performance, monitor server performance, stuff like that. And they've been in the Azure marketplace. They had a free offering where you could easily attach it to your subscription, take advantage of it. But got an email this week as one of the people who'd taken advantage of it was running on our sites. They have now removed this from the marketplace as of October the 17th. Existing users have until December the 17th of this year to keep using it. After December the 17th, whack, all existing instances are going to be terminated. So, wow, I just got a big slap across the, hey, guess what? You guys have 2 months to rip this stuff out. And oh yeah, guess what? It's also a holiday season where you may have some other stuff that's on your plans.
Yeah, we use this at Hyperfish and got that email a couple of days ago, and it made me stop and be like, what the boop? So yeah, we are being forced in the next, I guess, less than a month left to figure out what server monitoring solution we're moving to. Whether we're going to stick with New Relic is yet to be decided. But here's how I think this probably happened. This happened, so years ago, Microsoft did this thing with New Relic, right? New Relic was one of the first into the Azure marketplace, and they're like, cool, you can get a server in Azure and you get this free New Relic monitoring for one server, I think it was, or something along those lines. And then you can buy stuff through the Azure marketplace for more servers. I suspect probably what happened is a couple of years ago, whenever that came out, 2 or 3 years ago, was it? I can't remember.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I bet Microsoft paid them a wad of cash to do it. Big ass wad of cash. And went, cool, we want you to be sort of the premium partner in the Azure marketplace and want you to do this free tier for our users. And they were like, cool, that's really awesome. Pay us this amount of money and we'll do that. So Microsoft were like, cool, let's do that. And it sounds like very quickly, sometime in the new fiscal year, starting in July for Microsoft, they went, yeah, we're not going to renew that contract. And so they've stopped paying. I suspect. I have absolutely nothing to back this up and know nothing about the dealing about the deal. But I can just imagine that's kind of how it happened, right? And so so New Relic are pulling out pretty fast. And but what's weird is I got the email from Microsoft. And I think one of the reasons New Relic wanted to pull out of this deal anyway was they didn't really own the relationship with the customer. Microsoft owned the relationship with the customer, right? Because you buy it through the Azure Marketplace and all of that. And from a vendor's point of view, like, it's kind of bizarre, right? Because they don't, like, New Relic don't really own that relationship with you, and they don't really get to market to you and upsell you and make sure you're implementing it, you know, like, through customer success and all that sort of stuff. So kind of a bizarre setup anyway, but I suspect they want to take this opportunity to go, hey, well, we're probably not getting this money from Microsoft anymore, and we want to own the relationship and try to upsell those customers to our premium products. And so we'll take the hit. We'll lose some customers along the way, but hopefully some of them will move to some of our paid products.
Cards on the table. I use it, and I'm ticked off about it, and I'm not going to use New Relic after this. I would, frankly, for a third-party service, I like SemaText. I was using that for some other container-based stuff that I was doing before and like analyzing my logs and stuff. But I've also spent a lot more time in the last couple months with App Insights from Azure, and I absolutely love App Insights. I definitely like it from an application monitoring, performance, and events happening inside of it. I would like to try and work more with it to do more of the marketing any kind of stuff that like Google Analytics does, but much prefer App Insights over it. So that's just a little bit of news. There's some stuff that got taken away. We do have some Office 365 related news. Now, these are two things here that's one of a, hey, FYI, and then, well, two FYIs for people. The first one is around a new hackathon, or the third hack productivity hackathon that Office 365 is running. This is going on from September the 25th to December 18th of this year. So you've got, as of the time of the recording, you got 59 days to submit. And the idea here is that you can submit some sort of an Office 365 app or add-in that is eligible for prizes. So eligibility includes, you can have individuals or teams. You have to have a demo video associated with it. You have to have some images. You have to have a way for people to actually use it to play with this. And there's a bunch of prizes associated with it as well. There's the first prize is something like a little over $12,000 in cash, a meeting with Microsoft Ventures. Your team is featured on the Office Developer Podcast or equivalent, which I haven't seen an episode from them lately, so I don't know if that's where that's going to be. Post on the Better With Office site, and you're featured in the Office Store. And, of course, the big thing, you get up to five Microsoft sweatshirts.
Oh, man, I'm going to enter for that.
There you go. So, and there's a bunch of them. There's a, you know, there's a second prize down to $7,000, third prize down to $5,000. There's a popular choice, $500 in cash. There's a large organization recognition, which is non-cash. And then there's just a bunch of other stuff. Best Teams integration, best use of Graph, best use of Office 365 add-in, best SharePoint app. Hey, the best SharePoint app, the best add-in, the best Microsoft Graph, best Teams, those you get a Surface Book PC.
You get a PC, you get the Surface Book, and $2,500 in cash.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
So there's a cool, bunch of cool things there. So definitely go take a look at this. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. It's also at Office 365 Hack3.com. devpost.com if you're interested in that.
Yep, that looks really cool.
And then I have a little bit of news here about the Office 365 news or updates that come out. So this was somewhat announced at Ignite. Someone also, if you get the admin emails that ship out, you would have gotten this as well. So Office 365 is going to start flagging things as, quote, major updates. And what you're going to be able to do from that is subscribe to emails so that administrators can receive an email notification to know how long the capability that's part of this major update is going to be in first release before it hits standard release, standard being what we consider GA. So what's nice about that now is that when someone says, Microsoft says, hey, we're putting this thing in first release, and then it's going to go on to all the tenants, I can look at it as an administrator and say, well, how long do I really have until, while it's in first release, before it actually shows up in my tenant? Now I have visibility into that. So that's good.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's the better you can get heads up about things changing in your environment, you know, the better.
Absolutely. The other thing that is a part of this as well is that first release is being renamed to targeted release, Microsoft and you damn renaming of stuff. But anyway, first release is now called targeted release. Everything else is called standard release. So that hasn't happened yet. That will be happening. The email wasn't really clear on when that's going to happen, but basically when you see something that says targeted release show up, yeah, that's what we used to call first release, or what we still call first release until it gets renamed officially.
Yeah, gotcha.
That's my Office 365 news.
More branding renames. I know how you love those.
I really do hate those. But okay, why don't we jump into our interview here?
Yeah, let's do it.
So in this interview, CJ and I sat down with Adam Harmitz and Omar Shahin. Shahini. Oh, God.
Shahin.
Shahin, thank you. Screwed up again. I apologize, Omar. We sat down and we tried to find a nice quiet spot. We did find a nice quiet spot. And I swear it must have been 5-10 minutes into our interview that they decided to start taking the trash out all around us in what are by far the most loud trash bags I have ever heard in my life.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we picked a pretty poor spot, as it turns out. It was looking good to begin with, and then all hell broke loose in the trash cans next to us.
I was in a great spot. I was there for about 15 minutes ahead of time. I got my laptop out. I got a little bit of work done. I was like, I'm listening to everything. I even set the microphones out, and when everybody got there, it'd be okay. And I had the microphones out. I had my headphones coming into the line out for my microphone to monitor what's going on. I was like, this is great. There's all the background noise. It's very background. I can definitely echo, silence this out. And then there we go. We get a bunch of trash cans. So
yeah.
Anyway, we talked a lot about what's the news stuff, where things were going with Office 365, the news around OneDrive. It's close to Omar's heart. So with that, I want to go ahead and run the interview.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery, from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by ShareGate. ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 365 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check them out on ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
All right, so here we are with Omar and Adam. Thanks, guys, for coming along to the show. It's been a little while, so we really appreciate you taking the time and sitting down with us here at Ignite.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to be here. Long-time listener, first time on the show.
So. Yeah. First time caller?
Yeah, first time caller, there we go.
Excellent, yeah. So I guess for those of our listeners who are tuning in who don't know you personally, it'd be great if you could just both introduce yourselves and tell our audience a little bit about what you work on at Microsoft that they would probably use every day, or hopefully use every day, and just give them a little bit of background about yourselves. So, Omar.
All right, my name is Omar Shahin. I'm a Director of Program Management for OneDrive and SharePoint. That's a new job for me. I've been in for about 4 or 5 months, and prior to that, I spent 7 years working on OneDrive. Before we brought OneDrive and SharePoint together, I was in Windows working on a consumer OneDrive service. So I spent a lot of time trying to get file sync working and sharing in the cloud and all the wonderful features that we have. It's been fun. This is an interesting milestone, I think. Everybody's thinking about 10 years now because the iPhone is turning 10, iPhone 10 is coming out. My daughter's turning 11, so she's been around for 10 years now. And I just think back to like that decade as being really transformative for cloud adoption and cloud usage. It's been a really fun journey. And it's really fun to work in the team. And we've got a great Ignite this year. I think this was our best one.
It's been really, really showing up.
Yeah. It's
been a lot of fun.
Jeff does a great job of setting a high bar for our team. And he's a super fan and also our biggest critic. And so he does a good job just keeping the bar high and every year doing better jobs.
So previous to OneDrive Consumer, you came from the mail side of the house at some point, didn't you?
Yeah, so I joined Microsoft. I'm going to sound like an old person now.
Sorry to drag into that.
I joined Microsoft. It's going to be 19 years in a couple of months. So I joined in 1999, and I worked on Mac Office for 5.5 years. I was a huge Apple fanboy. It turned out Microsoft had the largest team of Apple developers outside of Apple back then. I worked on that on a team for 5 years, and then made the switch to Hotmail down in the Valley. So I was working in California, and I joined Hotmail the month after Gmail launched. Hotmail was a 2 megabyte inbox service. Right. Gmail launched with a gigabyte, and so it was an incredible 6 years there, just kind of really having to invest massively in consumer email.
What a time to arrive.
Yeah, I know. And then moved up to Redmond to work on really Windows Live. And
first commitment, take on Google. Got it.
I know, it was tough. They did a good job of disrupting us.
And so, Adam, we've obviously worked together in the past a little bit, but for those of you who don't know what you work on and a little bit of your history.
Yeah, good to see you again. So my name is Adam Armetz. I work on Omar's team, and I run the part of the team that thinks about the user experience for SharePoint across team sites, publishing and communication sites, as well as biz apps, work with the Power Apps and Flow team, and also developer platform experience, the SharePoint framework. Some people like Besa and Dan. I've worked on SharePoint my entire career. Just celebrated 12 years at Microsoft a few months ago. I was dropped pretty randomly in the office team, and I planned on being there for a year, then going back for my PhD.
Sure.
Yeah. Here I am, 12 years later, still working on SharePoint.
I just moved to the States for 2 years, and I'm here 10 years later. So.
Funny how life works out that way sometimes. Yeah.
I just picked up an internet project about 2003.
So. Still going.
And so you used to do a lot around ECM and SharePoint and things like that a number of years ago now.
Yeah. Right?
But manage metadata and records management and a bunch of the documents.
Yeah, so when
stuff.
I joined the team, we were finishing off the 2007 release, which was our first real foray into enterprise content management. I think I managed the project that was getting us DoD 5015 certified on top of the 2007 product. That was a lot of fun. I wrote 30 specs in a year. more specs than any other college new hire that I was around.
Straight in the deep end.
Yeah.
DoD, that's a tall order.
Yeah, I've gone in some different direction since then, but and then for the 2010 release, really, that was really where we rounded out ECM, and I helped sort of lead the document management area. Went for a while, worked on eDiscovery after that as part of content management. That was really interesting for us because we were still an on-prem product, but eDiscovery was the primary way we wanted Exchange and SharePoint to work together. It was probably one of the first major features where we wanted true deep interop between, at that point, the on-prem products, and that was sort of an early indicator, of course, when we brought everything together in Office 365, how the teams would work together and what the core technical problems were, and so that was a lot of fun. Then we were really getting serious about the cloud, and so I did a tour of duty on the back end of SharePoint, sort of deep in the bowels of authentication and user and tenant provisioning. And then Lauren Antonoff at the time was the director of program management. She asked me to incubate some of the new future of SharePoint work, and eventually led to the UX and developer platform job I have now.
Gotcha. So obviously this is a pretty big week for Microsoft. Second year Ignite has run. Feels like it's tripled in size, but it hasn't quite tripled in size. 25,000 people is pretty big though. And there's been some exciting news this week coming out. So we thought we'd just ask you what you guys think your sort of most exciting news is that's come out from your respective teams. And what your thoughts on that are.
So it has been an exciting week. I think we have a lot of people from the team here. And we knew that the keynote would be exciting, the session Jeff gave. We got to see OneDrive and SharePoint represented in two other sessions, I think on Monday, which is a big deal for us and our team to get that level of visibility from Kirk Koenigsbauer and from Ron. There were a couple of key features I think that were reinforced. One of them is OneDrive Files on Demand, which is, we took a run at this in Windows 8.1 and learned a lot about just how difficult it is to change the fundamental assumptions of file systems and how local files work, and trying to bring some of the cloud capability into the file system. And so we spent a long time over the last year and a half working with the Windows team to really deeply understand how to do a good job there. And during that time, the whole Microsoft 365 thing also started to develop. And so it's a timely feature to release because it's sort of representative of how we're starting to work together across Windows and Office to really bring together Office 365 as an experience that is more deeply integrated into Windows. I think you'll start seeing more features like that, especially in the management space, manageability. But we think it's a great feature for end users and administrators because it means you don't have to worry about bandwidth as much, which is a big concern for a lot of companies when they're thinking about how to move files around. That's, I think, a key highlight for us. I'm personally very excited about communication sites. Like, I love building websites. Like, it's like, I wasn't a computer science major in college, but I loved HTML and building websites. And when you see the kind of things that you just get out of the box and the stuff that our developers have done on behalf of web page authors, it's really cool. I think you take like the web part opportunities to build rich, you know, web parts and what we've done with first party web parts. The page layout, column flexibility. Like, I spent a lot of time blogging, and I've used a bunch of different blogging tools over the years, and I spent maybe 6 years even building a .NET blogging tool back in the day. And it's just, it's great that we have these capabilities today in web developments that we can really harness and create sophisticated, powerful, simple experiences that are just cool. And you know, we're just turning on now parallax scrolling capabilities.
Which, oh, really?
Yeah, they give these sites this really polished experience. It's incredibly difficult to do. Like, Jeff joked that this takes like hundreds of lines of JavaScript, and it's very difficult to get it right. But when you can do that for your customers, it just makes them look like superheroes when they send someone a link to a site and they're like, wow, you know, how did you do that? And so Adam was out on leave this summer. He had a second kid. And so I got to spend a bunch of time just like geeking out with the team. I tended to spend a lot of time on comp sites, giving the team feedback and on our mobile stuff. So that's a big highlight for me. And then the last thing I'd say is, prior to me taking this role, I spent like a good year and a half working on the team to fix our sharing experiences and really simplify and improve it. And that was a massive cross-team effort between us and the office team, to just take the complexity of sharing and policy and all the stuff that we have and really simplify it for the end user and bring that experience to all the endpoints, and also make external sharing work, which is a piece that is, up until now, has been incredibly hard. And people honestly would just try it and they don't have the tolerance for, I send you something and you can't access it. Like, we failed you if you're doing tech support for your documents that you're sharing.
Yeah.
I think Google did a great job simplifying that and has succeeded in many ways because they've made collaboration just kind of one click. And so we spent a long time trying to come up with a simple solution to that problem, and I think we achieved that this Ignite. So that was one of our big sort of announcements too. And that'll be rolling out very shortly. So really excited about that.
So it sounds like you've taken on Gmail, file sync and share, and external sharing.
Yeah.
I hate to think what comes next.
we're in it to win it.
Talk about the tough challenges, right? So
yeah, sometimes it takes us a while. We take a little meandering path through the woods.
Sure.
But then we get back on the you know, on the path and remember what we're here for.
I'm pretty sure Records Management's coming back, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That's next. DOD is coming back for you, Adam.
I'm curious to hear what you think.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously I agree with what you said, Omar. Comsites, I was sending a status mail. I did the pre-day on Monday, so for those who wanted to pay a little extra money, they got the entire conference from a SharePoint lens in 8 hours. And I was sort of reflecting on co-presenting with MVPs and as well as my marketing colleagues. And Comsites was by far the most fun thing to demo, I think, in my 12-year career. It's just to be able to really be able to create something incredibly quickly. We did a whole set of work this week after we announced in May that allows people to really map their business processes to creating Comsites. You can clone a page, you can start adding branding and layouts, multi-column, and obviously a bunch of page formatting features, which are, you know, a little bit like, hey, welcome to 1995, you got bold now, but it was necessary to sort of unlocking adoption. And so that was just a lot of fun. And then I always, you know, this conference is heavily IT focused, and so there's a lot of power users and people that are looking to be able to stretch SharePoint to the max. And so I think some of our investments with Power Apps and Flow, like, I think CJ, when you and I were working together, we always had the, like, who's going to answer the what's the future of InfoPath question?
I'm pretty sure I'm still asking. Are we getting there?
I think this was really a breakout year for that. You're probably aware you can replace a SharePoint list form with a Power App. It's pretty seamless. We preload the Power App such that when you click on various items, it instantaneously loads the form, allowing you to customize it for whatever you want and do conditional formatting and conditional logic. And these are real powerful forms on data scenarios, deeply integrated into SharePoint. And it's just something people have asked us about at several Ignites in a row. So to be able to really state with confidence, hey, check this out. It's not just an early peek at the vision, but here, you know, you should really map it to your business requirements and see if it works.
You've got a lot of the people too that have been in the past have been pretty critical of all of those things too, that on Twitter have been very supportive or giving very positive response watching the sessions going on throughout the week and seeing them as they're going on. You see lots of the same people kind of just coming back on Twitter at the same session, just like, you know, oh my God, it works. This is awesome. You know, communication sites are incredible. And that's what really, I mean, Gene, that's the part where the bellwethers who've been around doing this for a while, have been on the outside, who have been some of your biggest constructive criticism people, right? That really appreciate what you're doing. I really, really like it. And it says quite a bit.
Yeah, it's been certainly energizing for us. Like, we always wonder if we have good product market fit. We look at a lot of different ways of figuring that out, but certainly the reaction at a conference like this is super important for us.
Yeah, I sat down with Vesser at the booth and he showed me through the demo, the provisioning work that you guys have been doing. And that was very well done, I thought. I was really impressed and I sort of like to joke a little bit with them, and I called it modern site definitions. But being able to call out to flow and out to functions and things and have all that integration be super beneficial for businesses trying to roll these things out and not have users clicking around on the UI to do it and have it all sort of magically provisioned in a standardized way with the right set of parts on there and pages and all that sort of stuff.
That's the heart and soul of SharePoint. And then a bunch of people that come to a conference like this and want to know how to make the best use of SharePoint and what they can do to make sure SharePoint's adopted. Being able to create great templates for sites is a big part of that. And that one, for example, was one where I think we took a little longer to do because we wanted to do it in a way that was extremely performant. We did a lot of architecture work to talk about what would be pre versus post provisioning. And then the core ideas, of course, we incubated in PNP for years. We really helped the community help us understand both what the core needs were and then what was working to do remotely versus not.
Brought them along for the ride as well.
No, I think so. I'm excited about that one too.
Yeah. So also in OneDrive, there was an announcement, I think, last week about inclusion of SharePoint sites or the ability to hook to certain SharePoint sites and document libraries as well as your own personal OneDrive and have them all come down to your machine. I think that was something new that I heard last week. That I think will also make a really big difference because you've got all your own documents, but you really don't want a big home drive. At least I don't. I want to put them in the right spot. And it's always been super hard to go find those later on and things like that. So I think like inclusion of syncing certain SharePoint sites down as part of OneDrive was a really nice improvement as well. But you guys had a pretty tough battle with OneDrive over the last couple of years, and it feels like we've crested the wave, perhaps, and are starting to make some nice forward progress. But hopefully people will stop talking about sync.
People never stop talking about sync. Sync is one of the hardest computer science problems ever created.
Yeah, seriously. Now,
anybody who works on it comes away with a newfound appreciation for, it's all the edge cases.
Right.
Like making the 95% case work is not the hard part, it's the 5%. And then if you're dealing with files, all the weird idiosyncratic behaviors of applications and file systems.
Oh, right.
You know, people don't realize that when Office, you know, there's behaviors that are like rename a file, which is actually not a rename. It's creating a new file, deleting the old file, and then transacting it in an atomic fashion so that it appears to be a rename. You know, there's like all these things, different apps do different things. So the sync engine actually has to understand, oh, this is a Word document. It has these characteristics. This is an Adobe Photoshop file. They create a 0-byte file and then do this other thing. And so you don't want to sync it until it's done.
Until it's ready.
Yeah. So it's, and then Mac OS versus Windows have different sort of file system characteristics. So sync is one of those like really difficult problems. You build a lot of domain knowledge. And then when you get it working, you don't want to ever...
You don't want to touch it.
Yeah, regress. It's building up all of this understanding over years and years and years.
Yeah, as I said, I think hopefully we've crested that wave and you can start focusing on adding other features and then just sync.
It's more interesting work to do.
Yeah, nice. Hey, so you want to talk about SPFX has kind of come a really long way in the last 12 months. You launched a massive course on this not too long ago. It's showing up in a really...
My Twitter feed was filled with people that said I had registered for the course, you know, click here for your discount or whatever like that. It was
That's good to hear, because that was a last minute thing that we added. It was like, well, let's go put this in the email that they get back from, and thankfully everybody did it, so that was helpful. But
something I said to AC was it felt that the excitement around the Voitanos launch was perfectly timed in terms of people being ready for SPFX and SPFX being ready for them, I think, as well. For the last 12 months or so, people have been slowly warming up to the idea, I think. You guys have been adding things to it as well over time, obviously. And it feels like there might be a bit of an inflection point there where people are contemplating the move to the cloud. They're thinking, well, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it the new way. And how do we move some of our customizations and our custom web parts and all that sort of stuff? And that it seems to be coinciding with they've got to rebuild their intranet, or they've got to rebuild particular sites, and so they're going to do it the new way. And that seems to have sort of reflected, I think, in the level of excitement around the training, because they've got to figure out how to do it. So
yeah, and it was, I thought it was really interesting the last few days sitting through some of the SharePoint Framework sessions and hearing the presenters were asking, like Dan Kogan was asking everybody, how many of you are on 2003? How many of you are on 2007? Now I get it that a lot of people that are in the room, if you're on 2003 and you're in a SharePoint Framework session, you might be just longing for your company to move to the cloud or to finally upgrade. But even the people that were in the room, we talked about this with some of our listeners earlier today, it was really surprising to see the number of people raise their hands, say, how many of you are interested in it versus how many of you are actively building stuff with it today? And it was pleasantly surprised, well, somebody who's in the business now of it, but it was pleasantly surprising to see how the percentage of the number that was really there. So, I mean, you guys made a lot of announcements too, Ryan. We know we talked already to Dan Kogan and Vesta, even earlier this week, but you've done a lot of investments there that have been very well received this week with some of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think last year we came with a model for development, obviously steeped in the way people were doing it with script editor web part, but in a way that it was way more governed. And we had a pretty high value scenario, web parts, to sort of prove that model could work. And then this was the conference where we came back and said, we don't just have a model with one example, we have a model with a bunch of different places you can use it for really high value scenarios. And I think that really helps. I think that's going to cause this inflection in adoption and interest, because people have had time to digest the model, and now the model has the particular maturity and points it needs to be able to extend. And then, you know, sort of coming at it from the other angle was our team that owned modern lists and libraries, where we didn't have the extensibility, and they got a lot of feedback about the need to add that. And so, you know, being able to bring those two together really, I think, made for a good conference.
Yeah, it really did. And I think that, like you said, last year, you know, with people coming out, being able to see it, the first big conference, they see stuff about the SharePoint framework, they see the investments. But I think at this one, when they see not just a couple new features that are there, and I mentioned that I say a couple new features, like the things that developers can play with, there were a few things there, but when I was talking to Dan about it earlier, that it just seems to me that most of the big announcements of what you've done in the last few weeks in terms of releasing and what's been promised or what has been planned for the next few months before we go going out of 2017 into 2018 are they're real big like infrastructure component things that may not be sexy features, put that in air quotes, but it's stuff that really shows a commitment to the framework, things that are really going to help developers with that. And when you guys show up with community sites, when you show up with the new SharePoint admin portal, it's all built on top of the SharePoint framework. I mean, that shows that people have, I know that there was a question, you know, how behind is Microsoft on this new development approach or new development model? It's contentious to say that, but we'll just call it, like, say, another approach to extend SharePoint. When they see you guys betting on it as well, your stuff betting on it, as much as you were and as hard as you're pushing communication sites or as much as you're talking about it, and shows a level of commitment to them, gives people a little bit more confidence.
Yeah, no, it's felt first and third party alignment is super important. The fact that we use the framework ourselves to extend SharePoint and get partner teams to create web parts and use it ourselves even on the engineering team. Yeah, I think it's been a super part of the way that team is run. And then, you know, working, I think the team worked really hard to make sure extensions, for instance, could be GA, you know, right at the conference or right before. We got a lot of feedback last year that we talked about it, then it was a little bit of time before we went GA with the V1 of the SharePoint framework. So I was really proud of the team to hit the quality bars they needed so they could be comfortable calling extensions GA, because that really allows a great call to action, really use it in production. So
that brings up another point that I wanted to ask you guys about, was that we saw, I keep thinking it was 2 years, it might not have been that far back, but going from a classic mode in SharePoint to the modern approach, not just with pages, but lists and libraries and the whole experience. Can you comment a little bit on like the progress towards that of moving to modern? To me, it feels a little weird still having, you know, we have these two UI modes and now we have features that are added to help you move between the two UI modes. But I mean, are we trying to march to that point of modern is the UI? There is no more classic UI. And like, what are people looking at in terms of that future?
Jeremy Masner on my team likes to say we sort of have to earn the right for that. Right? So nobody should think we're going to be turning off classic document library UX when we see a lot of people still using it. Like, he runs his team where he has a dashboard every month that looks at the percentage of the traffic that is moving to modern versus classic. And we actually have a lot of control over that, because if we detect a feature we haven't supported in modern, we fall back to classic. So we have a filters pane now in the modern library that replaces metadata navigation, if you're familiar with that feature. And that caused a pretty big uptick in the percentage of modern adoption. And so we look at it, and that team is solely focused on the top reasons things are falling back, or interviewing customers that have chosen to turn it off and figuring out what would be needed and missing, and really every month making sure we're marching forward on that. And then over time, we hope to earn the right that nobody will need to use Classic anymore. But until that's true, we're going to spend as many engineering resources as we need keeping Classic working and performant and something people can use to get their job done.
So just like an active backlog to keep improving modern to get it to the point to try and take, to be able to, I guess, was it the development pattern of the strangulation pattern? Like you want modern to eventually strangulate classic where there's no reason to use classic, right?
Ideally, that is certainly what we're marching towards. And you know, it's not just about getting feature parity. We look at something like Flow and Power Apps, which goes well beyond what you could do in classic. And so it's a portfolio of investments, some of which would be new scenarios, some of which really are ports of what we see in classic. And I think it's a good way of driving the team to be very data focused and also focused really on what customers need and are using.
I would just echo the sort of we have a more of a philosophy now of earning the right to do things as opposed to pushing things out and expecting that's the definition of success. It's no longer the definition of success. Jeremy does have a list of things and reasons why people aren't using the modern experience and percent of users, and you know, can see in real time month by month sort of how that's trending. In OneDrive, we took a different approach because, you know, OneDrive is more, it's a little different than Team Sites. You know, people don't typically customize their OneDrives in terms of the UI experience, although historically they're built on top of the MySite experience in SharePoint. So there was some affordance for that. But we did move the user base to the modern experience first. That was one of the first things that happened a year and a half, 2 years ago. But we have a fallback mode, and customers can go back, and we pay close attention to why they go back. We still have the classic OneDrive experience out there. And there's, you know, that list of people is just getting smaller and smaller, but there's some good reasons why some organizations and schools will choose the older experience. And a lot of times it comes down to a feature that we haven't brought over. In some cases it comes down to customization, the new feature where you can customize the SharePoint page with the custom header. Some companies want that for their OneDrives to put in like a, you know, a message around don't overshare. We have debates on our teams about do we want that kind of extensibility in OneDrive, because we think a OneDrive is more a product we make and provide to end users on behalf of companies that run the service, or I guess are custodians. So it's hard to transition users through these user experience shifts. In mobile, for example, we don't do anything like that. We just redesign the app and ship it to all of our users. There's sort of an expectation that in that world, that's how things are. So it's, I'd say across our product line, we're just paying attention very closely to the feedback, the usage, and trying to drive the best experience possible forward. And I think it ends up creating a lot of the right work for the team and customer empathy along the way.
Speaking of usage, SharePoint 2019. Jeff was up on stage and talking about that. Obviously a continuation of the commitment to on-prem. I guess people are going to be stuck for good or bad on-prem for quite some time. And it's great to see the commitment to our continuing releases for that. Any thoughts around how some of these new experiences land for on-prem customers? I know it's super hard to bring some of the stuff down to the on-prem product, but certainly for ISVs and developers and things like that, folks like that, it makes it really hard to know what to target if you're trying to build for all the sort of facets of the matrix. It'd be really nice to be able to build solutions and training and intranets and all that sort of stuff that will kind of work anywhere. Any thoughts on the direction for SharePoint 2019 in those regards?
I think we haven't, you know, announced specific features and capabilities of 2019. Yeah. You know, we're sort of in the planning phase right now. Gotcha. For it. It's a really important effort. You know, one of the great things about being here at Ignite is just, you get to sit down with customers, and while we're not doing sessions, most of the team's actually either working at the booth or in 45-minute customer engagements in like the briefing centers or whatever. And you know, everybody we talk to has some on-premises investments, but they're also very excited about the cloud. And so, a lot of our customers, it's interesting, they start seeing the real benefits that come along with some of the new capabilities in Office 365, which include SharePoint experiences. Mm-hmm. And they have a lot of data and, workflow business processes run around their on-premises product. And we've gotten a lot of feedback that the hybrid investments we've made have been really key. Mm-hmm. To allowing them to adopt a lot of the new capabilities without having to have a migration plan per se, or to have like a big lift and shift exercise. Mm-hmm. So I think it just gives people, like, decompresses the situation and environment a lot, because they can adopt products like Teams. You know, a lot of companies that have millennials love Teams and they want them people to have Teams. And so they have SharePoint sites getting created in the cloud, even if they're still running, you know, SP 2013, 2016. Gotcha. And so I think in 2019, it's important that we continue to make sure we have a great bridge so that companies can run on premises side by side. There are some companies who are just like, no, we just want to bet on the cloud, we're ready. I think the investments we've made around multi-geo, around our sort of information protection capabilities, we just announced bring your own key. So I think the companies that are still seeing on-premise as a long-term investment give us great feedback on what we would have to invest in the cloud in order to make that a leap for them. And that's a place we really invest a lot in to make the transition. And in some cases, the capabilities in the cloud are going to be more sophisticated and better. Those things just won't exist. And so there's sort of more incentivized to think about taking advantage of some of those capabilities that they didn't have before.
Yeah, it really was a couple years ago where I think we clarified that coexistence is not a sort of interim state, but it's going to be a state people are in for a while. And I think that as a product designer, we take that to heart, right? We think about our features assuming people will be in hybrid mode. And that is really where I think we had a strategy for the cloud that started really resonating with the community. And then I also take to heart that SIs and ISVs have a very different problem. They're not talking about one particular you're dealing with an entire ecosystem as well. And as much as we can, if we want SharePoint Framework to be incredibly successful, you want it to get at as many sockets as possible. And on-prem is an awesome place for that, which is why we did at least our first step there in Feature Pack 2, bringing client-side web parts there. And we do think a lot about how, if we want to make SharePoint Framework successful, we need it in as many places as possible. And like you said, you want to be able to write something once and have it as much as possible run in any environment. So
yeah, I think there was a SharePoint conference, I can't remember which one it was, maybe 2011 perhaps, something along those lines, where the community came away feeling like, wow, they just don't care about us on-prem anymore. And then the step a couple of years back, I think it was, when Jeff got back on stage and was like, we're going to do another server release. For anybody in the actual know, it was zero surprise, right? It's too big a business to let drop on the floor. And so obviously, but some people were very, very excited, but just hearing the news was a big deal. And I think this is another step in that sort of continuation of we want to keep supporting our existing customers and help them get there as best as we can.
And we did announce that we are going to build OneDrive sync support for 2019 with the new sync client, which I think for people is great news because it means for our customers, they'll have one solid sync experience that works for all. I mean, there isn't any vendor out there that is providing the same sync client for personal consumer content, your private or personal work content, your team content, both in the cloud and on-premise. Like, that takes a major, major investment on our part, but I think it reflects that we don't, as to Adam's point, this isn't a temporary situation, and we really want to make sure that our best code and product is there to support people collaborating on files.
On the topic of sync, one random kind of completely out of the blue question, Azure File Sync, what is that? And is it using the same thing that you built for OneDrive, or is it something off Azure off doing by themselves?
So did you ever hear about a product called WorkFolders?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So that's the new name for WorkFolders.
Gotcha.
And it really goes after a different scenario and customer. It's really for companies that have file shares, on-premise file shares, and they still need to have file shares for whatever line of business scenarios they have or whatever. It sort of moves the file share model from being I buy servers and hardware and hard drives, and then I have to manage space to that model sort of stays the same, but the files are actually in Azure and you're just paying them monthly for your utilization. It doesn't support collaboration, the rich sharing capabilities. It's for companies who really want to maintain that file share experience.
Gotcha.
And we don't think of ourselves as file share, we think of ourselves as much more. So it's really just like, we have a lot of customers and we want to make sure they're supported and there's just a lot of folks that
still... That's one option for them for the traditional sort of network share kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
We think files on demand and Windows brings a lot of that same experience to Windows. And so we do think that a lot of folks that are heavy file share users really should think about moving their content to Office 365 and SharePoint, but we want to make sure that we're not leaving those folks behind either.
Thanks again for spending a bunch of time with us. We've really appreciated you sitting down. Any sort of parting thoughts? In KT Link, well, he's gone now, but any sort of go-dos for our audience that you'd leave them with?
Yeah, I mean, comm sites are in broadly in GA. They're broadly applicable. We're adding all the new stuff we talked about this week over the coming months. We have a hashtag called comm site gallery. We're really
comm
trying
site
to create,
gallery. Okay.
Trying to create as many. If you're willing to share an example of comm sites that you've created, we just share an image out there. We love seeing it. We share it with the team. Really a call to action to go use those, but then as much as you can, so that we're collecting as many examples as we can. We love to see it. So
yeah, not just like we love the feedback. I mean, we have a Jeff announced SharePoint conference where there's a North America conference in Las Vegas next year. Right. Our team will be there. That'll be a big moment, just like Ignite is. And I think we had, 11 blog posts. I mean, this is a volume of information we put out on Tuesday. It's pretty significant. We have a lot of listening channels in our team. Please use them. We have the App Store ratings. We have user voice. We have the tech community. So there's just a lot of ways in Twitter, of course. A lot of us are on Twitter now. I think we just like hearing from our customers. Like, what did they like? What did they not like? What are they excited about?
Yeah, well, thanks for listening to the show as well. I know you've held us accountable on a couple of comments from your previous episodes. So we appreciate the feedback, too.
Absolutely.
Thanks again, guys. Have a great rest of the show and safe travels.
Awesome. Thank you.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
Okay, CJ, any thoughts from our discussion with Omar and Adam from our little interview we just showed?
No, they're such great guys coming on the show and you know, having a laugh about some things as well. Sort of Omar was great about kind of owning up to things not being great in the past and working really hard on things. And so there's a level of honesty there that I really appreciated. But you know, they're doing good things now. They're working really hard on making OneDrive better, obviously. Integration with Windows is coming along really well. Yeah, that was really interesting, actually. The comment Omar made about the work that they had to do with Windows to do sync really well was actually really, he made the comment quite quickly and sort of in passing, but I've been thinking about it in the weeks since we interviewed them. And, you know, I'm a heavy Dropbox user, but one of the painful things with Dropbox is working on files with other people. And if you're both in a dock at the same time, you could kiss your document goodbye. Like, it's great for one person editing a doc, but it is pretty sucky for multiple editors. And you end up with like multiple copies of the document that have conflicted and saving, you know, and you lose changes all the time. It's really a piss poor experience. And OneDrive beats it hands down for multiple editors. And that just that comment about different file formats and doing that stuff properly really hit home. And so although OneDrive's had a real bad rap over the last wee while, they obviously understand the complexities of these things. So that was really good to see. I want for a lot in the OneDrive clients and everything to get, you know, to get me to use it. But they've been making pretty rock solid progress. That's the way I'd put it, which is great.
Yeah, I agree with that. Cards on the table. I'm not a OneDrive customer. I've tried it multiple times. I've tried it every time they have a new sync client out. I have not tried it with the latest one. I've been there, I've done that, I don't want to do it. I don't want to move my stuff around again. There's nothing there that is compelling enough for me to switch from what I'm currently using right now. But that's not to say that they don't have a good offering now. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. And then on the SharePoint stuff, they're making good progress. They're getting stuff out. They're getting, you know, SPFX progress, modern sites, better templating, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it was great to catch up. They had a lot to talk about at Ignite this year, which I thought was really good.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Okay. Well, why don't we take care of a few picks here? I got a few picks we want to share with our listeners.
Yeah, let's wrap up. We're kind of going pretty long on this one, so we better be quick.
Yeah, we're going to be quick. All right. So mine is very quick. Mine is a post by the Microsoft Edge blog or the Edge team, but it's really much bigger than Edge, thankfully.
Could you read it in Chrome?
Yes, I can read it in Chrome.
Okay, cool.
So it's called Documenting the Web Together. And the idea is that Microsoft, Google, the W3C, Samsung, everybody has gotten together, Mozilla, they've all gotten together and they said, you know what? We're going to put the web documents, we're going to put all the web documents on a new page and a new library page powered by Mozilla. So it's MDN, the Mozilla Developer Network, has always been the best place to get things about HTML spec, JavaScript spec, all those kinds of things. Best place to get those docs. Well, they've all collaborated. They've all gotten together and they said, you know what? Let's just all put it in one spot. Microsoft doesn't need their own. Google doesn't need their own. Let's put it all together and we'll all put it on Mozilla. I think it's an absolutely fantastic move that they've done. I love the fact that there's going to be one spot. I did find that the Microsoft Edge blog post was quite funny because at the part where it talks about browser compatibility, they pick one feature and on the desktop feature, across the board, it's like, yes, all this is supported except for Internet Explorer. There's no support. For the one feature they picked, I'm like, really? You couldn't have picked one?
Oh, man.
But hey,
it's pretty funny.
It's good news. It's great. One spot for web docs. It's just nice that the place that I was already going is now going to get better.
That's cool. In non-tech related news, there's a Kiwi starting in Formula One this weekend at the United States Grand Prix for the first time in like decades. Brendan Hartley, he's got a spot with the Toro Rosso Formula One team. It's not a contract for a long time, but he's doing the US Grand Prix. And as we record this, they're in free practice one. So I'll be watching with keen interest. If you're not a Formula One fan, it's like, to put it in perspective, there are more people that have been into space than have driven a Formula One car in a Grand Prix. So it's kind of a big deal. And it's nice to see a Kiwi make it into a spot and a seat. Hopefully he gets a contract and stays around. But he won the, with the rest of his team, three people, won the 24-hour of Le Mans race this year. And so he's a great driver, so we'll see how he does in F1.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, hey, CJ, another good episode. We got the books. Let's go on to episode 223 next week.
Yeah, sounds good, man.
All right, good to see you. Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.